Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 33 for July 18th, 2008, OpenJDK. This show and the entire TWiT broadcast network is brought to you by donations from listeners like you. Thanks. It's time for Floss Weekly, everybody's favorite look at free libre and open source software. That's where the floss comes from. Mr. Randall Schwartz is our host, our genial host. He is a very famous Perl programmer, now a Squeak programmer.
Small talk.
There we go. Seaside programmer at Stonehenge.com. But he's got his fingers in all the open source pies and brings us such great guests. Who do we have this week, Randall?
Oh, this is going to be a great show. These guys are just amazing. We have Dalibor Topic and Bruno Souza. They are both involved in various ways with the fact that Sun just recently open sourced the entire Java implementation from top to bottom, including all the libraries. And this is a great show because this is great. These guys, actually, the way we got to them is that the show topic was suggested, again, by listeners like you. Great, great guys out there. Thank you for sending in your topics. It's really been helpful for me.
It is. It's great because we want to do stuff you want to see. So what is it? Merlin? Yeah. M-E-R-L-Y-N.
M-E-R-L-Y-N at Stonehenge.com. Or you can just Google for GoGoPuffs. You'll go right to my homepage. But if you send ideas to me, and that's how this idea came in, of saying, hey, OpenJDK just coming out now. Right. You really ought to get that on Floss. I said, wow, it does sound big. I went to a recent interviewee that we had actually about a year ago now, Josh Berkus, who works at Sun.
Yeah.
And I said, Josh, who do I talk to about this new OpenJDK thing? And Josh, bless his soul, went in and introduced me to both of the guys that we're about to have on today. And not only that, but when one of them wrote back and said, I'd love to be on Floss. It's one of my favorite shows.
Isn't that nice?
That's great. That's always nice when we know that our community is, in fact, listening to our show, which is great.
Let's lay some groundwork for this so people, as we talk, will understand what we're talking about. So, Sun created Java. It's a programming language, write once, run everywhere programming language, which means that you write in this language, but that every individual platform, whether it's Debian, Mac OS X, Windows has a Java virtual machine running on it that takes the language code you've written and turns it into the opcodes for that particular processor and platform. So, and in fact, it has a swing library, so you can even make it look like it's native to that platform with the buttons and the menus all looking appropriate. So a lot of stuff is written in Java. You've seen it on the web, of course. When you go to many websites, Yahoo Games, for instance, you when you play those games, you're running Java very often. Flash, though, has kind of been eating Java's lunch lately in that area. Java is still used in a lot of open source projects, and it's used a lot for enterprise computing, I think, because it's easy to maintain. It has things like garbage collection that make sure your memory is kind of, the integrity of your memory is maintained by the virtual machine. So Java is very important, but Sun owns it. Or, I mean, it's a Sun language, right?
Yes. Was that the only question? I mean, you gave away everything. So
I told you everything. But I mean, that's kind of key to this because it, you know, everybody wants to use it. There are a lot of reasons why you might want to use it, but there's one little problem. It's not like C or C++ or Ruby or Python. It's not an open source language.
Well, it wasn't up until now. And that's actually the important part about this. When Sun originally created Java, what they said is we're going to create a VM that, you know, runs everywhere. But the problem is it runs only everywhere that Sun wanted it to run. And if you didn't happen to have one for, say, the iPhone, it could never run on the iPhone because Sun didn't actually let it run there. So what happened in the meanwhile is that a number of open source implementations of Java were created so that people could run these same Java bytecodes, the output of the Java compilation process, on platforms that Sun hadn't necessarily gotten to, or if they people only wanted open source software from top to bottom in their entire stack, they could run these bytecodes with their own VM. But the problem with this is it created a Tower of Babel because we had all these different implementations and Suns was still locked up and it was just a real mess. And so our guests today, from what I understand, they brought together a lot of what had to happen to make Sun actually be interested in making this an open source project so that it could be open source from top to bottom.
Very good. Let's welcome our guests from Germany. We've got Dalibor Topic, who we on the line via Skype, and then Mr. Souza in Brazil,
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, close.
Yes, pretty close.
Okay, I knew it was one of the others. Bruno Souza is in Cincinnati, and we welcome you guys to Floss Weekly. And now, Dalibor, do you also work for Sun or no?
I do, since about 3 months, actually. It's been 3 months on Tuesday.
So you're new to Sun.
So it's.
What was your association?
Well, I kind of switched sides. I have trouble understanding you. I guess somebody over here is violating the Bruno network. But basically, I switched sides. I used to kick them in the shins to make Java open source, and once they did that, came over there to help them make the whole thing work out. So that's what happened.
Java's been around for quite some time. I mean, Java's at least 15 years old, yeah?
Yeah, Java's announced in 1995, yes.
Wow, so it's actually, that's 13 years old, yeah. And wasn't open source until about 5 minutes ago.
5 minutes?
Well, all right, 5 months ago. So, Dalibor, were you at Sun when that process began? Or actually, let me ask Bruno that. Were you at Sun when that process began, Bruno?
No, actually, I officially rejoined Sun on the following day that Sun announced that is going to be open source in OpenJDK.
Right.
So I was most of my pressure for Sun to open source it happened while I was outside of Sun.
Isn't that interesting?
And that's because you're working with the Brazilian community down there, right? And working with the open source community there, and you wanted to. Will you tell the story?
Yes, I think that Java for Brazil has been very, very important since the very beginning. In 1996, Java was barely a year old. Some very large companies in Brazil were doing a large investment. So we had this large bank, for example, that trained 800 developers in 1996. To start focus on Java. And the importance for Brazil was that Java allowed to break from the lock-in of the vendors. And for companies, and especially for the Brazilian government, that was very, very important. So this freedom that Java brought at that time, and you have to remember that, 1995, that was even before the open source definition was even defined. So we're talking about, so Java brought to companies and to the Brazilian government a level of freedom that didn't exist before. And I think that this is something that's very interesting, that in Brazil, the search for freedom, it's a long time process. And once open source started to catch up in Brazil, because they're looking for, the country was looking for other kinds of freedom too, Java was already established technology in the country. And so we really wanted to do one step ahead, right? To get more freedom, and so while in the rest of the world there's this huge conflict between the free software, the open source community, and the Java community, in Brazil those two communities went along very well because they were both like freedom searching communities, and I think that's how it started. That in Brazil we started this discussion that. That we should be supporting the open source initiatives to actually the free software and open source initiatives to create a Java virtual machine, and then now that Sun has open source OpenJDK, then things got a lot easier. But this, I think that's Java and free software and open source were a very strong combination because one gives you the freedom, the long term freedom. Of being able to, knowing that the software is going to be there, knowing that you're going to get support, knowing that you're going to be able to take it wherever you need, But Java also brings the freedom of, you know, not being tied to any OS or any vendor, even a free or open source OS.
Was Brazil the source of the first movement to write an open source Java? I know there was a couple of parallel threads, if I remember right, back in those days.
Well, no, Brazil is not a first initiative. On the contrary, there was a lot of very strong initiative going on. So Dalibor was doing the Cafe VM at that time. Ah. And there's the ClassPath project. So what happened is that in Brazil, we decided that those projects, they were very, very important, and they should be completed. And more than that, they should be made compatible. So that's kind of the discussion that we started, that, you know, we should be supporting one of these open source projects, you know, GCJ, Cafe, ClassPath, one of those projects. We should be supporting them so they would become, you know, feature complete and Java certified. So
Dalibor, what was the starting of that for you? How did what motivated you and your team to start the Cafe project and get those things going?
Actually, I didn't start it. So it was started by Tim Wilkinson back in 96. So just pretty much a year after Sun released their version, there was already a team of open source developers trying to produce a free software version of the JVM. And they were actually the first ones to have a JVM running on Linux. It took Sun, I think, a year to catch up with that back in 97 or so. But I wasn't there at the time. I mean, I had other things to do in my life too. So I joined Cafe around 2002 when the project was a bit dormant, since the company that financed most of development was refocusing and eventually doing the whole .com crash thing. They were based in California. They were called Transvirtual. They had some really fancy things going on, like I think they used Cafe in the end to run XML GUIs on PDAs, mm-hmm. which sounds a bit like all these things people are doing these days with Android, but just in 2002, so way ahead of their time. I looked around and saw that Cafe was this nice, interesting little project that was able to run so much code out there. It was able to run even Swing applications with Sun Swing, the jar stuff from the first release. Mm-hmm. So it looked like a fairly complete VM, very portable and all that. So I figured I could invest some time into building it up a bit and seeing how far we can just get by trying to unite the whole free Java community around, say, a backbone project, and see how far we go with that. Because even though Cafe was there and was a sort of a brand in a sense, but the people have heard about it and seen it in the package managers, there was a whole world of other implementations out there by the time already. There was Jafar, there was GCJ, and there were many other smaller VMs that are doing their own thing. And one problem those VMs all had was that writing a VM is a lot of work, and then writing a fast VM is a ton of work, really. But then writing your own class library is an additional ton of work. So as Java grew with each revision from 1.0 to 1.1 to 1.2 and so on, the number of class libraries grew extremely fast. So you got Reflection, you got the whole Swing APIs on top of AWT, you got all the Corba stuff and so on and so on. But it was pretty clear that just the scope of implementing class library was too much for a single project. So when I joined Cafe, one of the first things I did was to look around and see that there was the GNU ClassPath project already going on, which was based on a Jafar class library at the time. And they were just going through thinking about a merge with the GCJ project, which was the FSF's implementation of Java as an ahead of time compiler. So they started thinking about those things. And it was clear to me that this was the kind of backbone I was looking for, that GNU ClassPath could be used to serve as a shared backbone between different VM implementation projects who could feed into that. So
so you were sort of the instigator to bring some of this together then, right?
Well, I was lucky enough to step on the scene at a time when most of this was when the idea, when the time was ripe for the idea, right? And I had some fun conversations at RMLL with back in 2003 with Mark Wielert, who at the time was had just become the GNU Classpath maintainer, about how to proceed with all this, how to push Free Java forward, because we agreed this was a thing worth pushing. It was clear that Sun would take some time to open up things. At the same time, we saw that if we wanted Free Java to happen, we would have to show that it's viable, that it's interesting, that it makes sense. Yeah. And we were seeing this massive explosion, kind of a Cambrian explosion around Apache and other open source software written in Java that otherwise, without the Free Virtual Machine, would have been, well, either unavailable on many operating system platforms or just very, very hard to get installed, maintained, and all that.
So at what point were you approaching Sun then? I mean, at what point, and either of you can answer this, what point did Sun become involved or become noticing that there was this open source movement? I mean, I'm sure they were probably noticing all along, but at what point did you sort of say, now is the time that we need to start getting our friends at Sun listening to this so that we can move this forward?
Well, I think that Dalibor can correct me, but I think that the first time that we were able to get, you know, the guys from the free VMs together officially with someone from Sun was the time that we joined, you know, we brought Dalibor to Brazil for a conference, and he was able to sit for about an hour to talking with James Gosling. And that's the creator of the Java technology. And with Ono Klutz, that at the time was the lead contact for the JCP. And I think that helped a lot people at Sun to understand the importance of the open sourcing, of an open source implementation of Java specs.
Was that at a Fizzly or was that some other conference?
There was a conference called Café Brasil. That's okay. A conference run by Soul Java. That's a large Brazilian Java user group.
Cool, because I've been to a few of the Fizzlies now. So, in fact, we last met there. Was it this year? It was this year, right?
Yeah, I think that it was this year, yes. Mm-hmm. So, actually, Fizzly, a couple of years later, Fizzly was the time where both Dalibor and Mark Wielert went down to Brazil. And then we were able to sit down for quite some time with Dave Wheeler to discuss a strategy for promoting all of the efforts around the open sourcing of Java that were happening at the time. So there's a lot of VMs going on. There's a lot of, you know, test suites. There's everything that you needed to actually put Java on a free environment. And it was an interesting situation that, you know, contrary to most of all the open source projects, Java, you know, the Java implementations that exist at that time, they were complete enough for you to run hundreds and hundreds of applications. They had a good performance. They had a lot of going forward for them. And even then, the open source community would not look at those projects. It was a very, very weird situation. And the thing that was missing was really the compatibility story.
Mm, tell me, what does that mean? Tell me about that.
You know, because it was an interesting situation that, you know, all of those projects, they were extremely important projects, but they kind of felt into this void that the free software community didn't want to take a look at it because, you know, they thought, well, this is a Sun thing and it doesn't matter if someone implements it, you know, whatever, it's not open source and we don't want to talk about it. There's other language that we can use. And on the other hand, the Java community was saying, well, you know, those guys, they're open source, that's good, but they're not compatible. You know, they're not Java compatible. So they can't run everything.
So the theory was that eventually there would be enough of a divergence in the implementations that I couldn't trust an open implementation of Java or whatever you would call it, since it couldn't be Java. An open implementation like Cafe would not be exactly compatible, so I might not be able to run all the software that gets downloaded. I have to write for two environments, essentially, right?
Well, it's not really a question about forking. It's actually more a question of, you know, that implementation was not complete enough that you could just assume it was there and just run it. You know, you would have to test the application at that time because, you know, there's still things missing. So we had this interesting situation, for example, where you would install a Linux distribution that would include Cafe or ClassPath or even JCJ, one of those implementations, and you would just kind of run a Java application would fail. And you had no idea that the reason why it was failing was because the implementation was installed already was not compatible, right? And then, you know, you just don't know who to blame, right? And so I think the whole thing about the compatibility, the Java community was saying, if it's not compatible, we don't care about it. So all of those guys, you know, you can imagine how hard it is to do a Java VM. It's a huge effort. And yep. The guys from ClassPath, the guys from JCJ, you know, the guys from Cafe, they were doing this wonderful, extremely technical, you know, very, very good work. And they were being ignored by both communities they're trying to help. It was a very unique situation in the open source world.
So at what point did this flip? At what point did people at Sun finally come forward and say, you know, maybe it's about time that we had the real Java, the quote Java, trademark Java, actually open source? At what point did that happen, and what triggered that?
Well, I think it's kind of started with that meeting. I think Dalibor was very, very successful in talking with James and talking with Ono and showing the importance of all of these. Mm-hmm. And also, one thing that helped it is that, you know, all of these happening inside a couple of events, you know, they're happening in Brazil. There's Café Brasil and then Friesland the next year. Mm-hmm. That there was a huge discussion of open source in a whole country. And it was clear to everyone that Java was an important strategy in all of these. And it was missing the components that, you know, Java was not, there's not a really compatible implementation of Java that was open source. And that kind of, you know, I think that's when people start to understand how important that would be. And of course, that's, once you understand it, you can't just simply snap your fingers and have it done, right? So once you understand it, there were a long time to convince everyone of the importance of these and then kind of and make it happen, right? Even when Sun announced it, it's been more than a year now, and there's still work being done to make it happen.
Yeah, now part of this, I think, if I read the notes correctly here, is that there was a component that Sun created, and they could do what they want to with the license, but a lot of this, or some of this, was borrowed or licensed technology. And did that make it harder? And if so, how was that worked around?
So, you know, Java was composed by, you know, the whole process of even the creation of Java technology through the GCP is a lot of companies working together, right? So, and at that time, the GCP rules did not say anything about open sourcing, right? So a lot of the things that were put inside the Java VM were sometimes just licensed from someone. So most of the code that Sun had licensed from other companies was able to, you know, Sun was able to negotiate a deal, or, you know, the company didn't mind open sourcing the code, or Sun could negotiate some kind of deal to actually make it happen. But so most of the code was, Sun was able to acquire the rights to open source it. But there was a small part of it that's about 4% of the code that Sun did not have the rights to. And the companies that were involved, you know, either didn't care to open source that part, or, you know, they didn't care enough for the product to even negotiate anything with Sun. So this small part of 4% that could not be open sourced.
Okay. And how long did it take?
Back then.
Sorry, go ahead.
So it could not be open sourced back then, of course. I mean, meanwhile, a lot of other good things happened. So.
Well, so what was the timeline from like somebody at Sun deciding then that this was going to be open source to the time that it was actually open source for the parts that Sun could do versus, I guess, what's happened just recently, which is that it all got open sourced, right?
Well, Bruno was there, so he can talk about that part. I can tell you how it looked out from outside. And so,
well, you know,
go ahead, Bruno.
Not, actually, that's a funny part because none of us were there, right? Both me and Dalibor, right. We were totally outside of Sun. Pressuring, actually, you know, it's funny that neither me nor Dalibor, we were telling Sun what Sun should do with their code at that time. Mm-hmm. We were working to make sure that the implementations being done by the community would be complete enough and compatible enough to be able to pass the TCK test, mm-hmm. right? And so the convincing of Sun kind of run parallel to that. And I think that the fact that this work was being done kind of helped make clear to Sun that, you know, it made no sense for them to not open source Java, because that would happen somehow anyway. So no, and later on the Apache Harmony project was created, trying to do the same thing. So there was a huge movement around open source, the open source implementation of Java, and then Sun realized it. That it was important that, you know, there's no reason for us to, all of us, to be replicating this work that was Sun had already done, right? Mm-hmm. We really don't need so many people redoing the same thing, right? So then Sun realized that it was on everyone's best interest to open source it, and neither me nor Dalibor were at Sun at that time. I joined at Sun, you know, on the following day as the after the announcement. And then Dalibor joined when the code was already out there.
So when was that announcement? You keep saying that, but we're talking about a year ago.
The announcement was in November of 2007. Dalibor, I think.
This was several parts. So
the announcement 2006, right? November 2006.
The actual announcement was in at Java 1 in 2006. Basically, back then, Sun had announced that they would first be publishing the Java runtime and development kits under a more liberal license than they used before, in particular, in order to collaborate more closely with Linux distributions, still proprietary, but meeting many of our demands, because with my Debian hat on, what we did back in the early days was, of course, to create a network around free implementations together with Linux distributions, and to figure out how we can package and make sure that most of the free software we can get hold of, we can collaborate with, because they're open source, the VMs are open source, distributions are open source, it all works. Mm-hmm. But all of this stuff grows and works in Linux. And as that progressed, we also made clear to Sun that the licenses back then weren't really acceptable for distributions, like Debian, for example. So there was a conversation going about liberating that license, and the liberalization of that license happened in May 2006 with the DLJ, the distribution license for Java, I think that's what it's called, which was still proprietary, but had many of the nasty things removed. Mm-hmm. And pretty much the same day, Sun announced that they were also thinking about open sourcing Java for real. That took me quite by surprise, because I didn't expect them to actually do it, given that I had spent so much effort in actually creating another proprietary license for it, a more benign one, but still proprietary. Mm-hmm. But in the following months, Sun reached out to the people in the free runtime community, you know, Cafe, ClassPath, and all that. And we're quite actively seeking our advice on how to go about it, and tell them, well, showing us they were really serious about it. So they consulted us with respect to licensing, respect to how to deal with code availability. So we suggested that in order to show that they were serious, that waiting for, say, a year or two until they were done with everything wouldn't really work well. So the community was interested in seeing something happen. It was clear Sun wouldn't be able to pull off everything within a couple of months. So we suggested that they start with the hotspot virtual machine and the Java compiler. So on one hand, just the compiler as a tool. On the other hand, the crown jewel, which is pretty much the best runtime out there. Mm-hmm. And that's what it released after 6 months. So that was the first code drop in November 2006. And that showed people that, yes, they were serious. Yes, they're working on it. And by that time, they had picked a license. And wisely enough, Sun had chosen to pick a licensing model that matched ClassPath. So our work that we do with distributions on making sure that there is a license model around the GPL with a ClassPath exception, and making sure that's accepted by all distributors and they're used to it, know how the implications of it are. They could basically profit from that and have a made bet later on when the rest of the code followed. And the rest of the code followed, except for the missing 4% in the following 6 months. So it was done by Java 1 2007 in May. That's when Sun could announce that, yes, there is a tarball out there of the JDK with some bits that are still would require work to get fixed, but something people could download, build, and actually play with and install and all that. And they did. I mean, I was at that keynote, and I think they announced, hello, we have an OpenJDK download server. This is the tarball. And, you know, a couple hours later, the Gentoo guys on IRC went wild and created the package. And, of course, sitting next to me, my friend from Fedora, Tom Fitzsimmons, who's their Java maintainer, he couldn't let that one stand, right? So he went to his hotel and created an RPM package from that build for Fedora. And so it went. And the year since May 2007 till this May, was basically a year spent fighting encumbrances and making sure that that encumbered code is now largely gone.
At what point now are we at? I mean, I think, is the milestone like a few weeks ago that it was all cleaned up? Is that, were we right in that ballpark?
Yeah, it's pretty much all cleaned up. There is one tiny bit left over, which isn't actually part of the specified set of the class library, which is the SNMP support somewhere deep below. But we're working on that one. Beside that, everything you need to actually build a thing and certify it as Java is there, as free software. And that's what Red Hat did.
So I can take all the source code that I see, and it's under GPL2 plus class path or something like that, right? And I can take this all, put it on my machine, compile it. I get a VM and libraries that I can take any normal Java program from or Java library and run it against it, and it just works, right?
That's the plan, yeah.
Yes.
That's the plan.
So that's exactly the idea, that you have a fully open source and certified, I mean, that is able to pass the TCK implementation. And that would give you the guarantee that whatever application you wanted, you could get and just run on it.
Now, what relationship does this have with what Sun is now shipping as Java, quote unquote, as they're sending stuff out, like, and especially like embedded in cell phones and things like that? What relationship does this have with what Sun officially calls Java?
So there's two different things here. There's two implementations, right? There's a Java Standard Edition, you know, that's a Java VM, the hotspot, everything that we're talking about here so far. Mm-hmm. And then there's another VM that's the Java Micro Edition VM that actually goes inside the phones. So Sun does not have a phone, so Sun does not ship the Java Micro Edition VM anywhere. But it is also open source. It was put in open source on a GPL license. Okay. But you know, most of the companies that do the phone VMs, they're shipping their own VM that's they usually license from Sun and they modify to run their own phones. But in terms of the Java SC implementation, basically, the whole idea is that it is the Sun's implementation is based on the code base of the open source implementation, right? So in general, in all of the Sun open source projects, we have a policy that, you know, all of the development happens on the open source project, and then we get a snapshot of the open source project, and then we turn this internally, and we do testing, do quality assurance, all of that. Sometimes we do include things that that are not on the open source projects. So, for example, in OpenOffice, we do include all of the fonts, for example, that Sun doesn't own. We also include some graphics, for example, that also Sun doesn't own. So there's small modifications on the what we would call like the commercial version, but it's always based on the open source product, right? Right now, I think Dalibor can talk better about this, but right now, the OpenJDK is actually based on, you know, so right now we have Java 6, that's the latest implementation of Java, right? So mm-hmm. Java 6 was done before OpenJDK was released. So actually, the code for OpenJDK is actually more advanced, I would say, than the code of Java 6, because you know once we finish Java 6, we keep developing it, and the code that was released as open source was this kind of the future Java 7 code, right? And then it was retrofitted back so we could have a open source Java 6. So it's kind of there's a little bit of difference between the two because of how it happened.
Okay. So how does this affect the end user? I mean, if I'm an OpenOffice user, am I going to notice anything different because of this revolution in open sourcing Java?
I think that the biggest advantage in terms of the end user is that the whole objective of Java is to be available everywhere, right? You as a developer, you want your codes to run anywhere. So we had a gap that although Java was available in a lot of places, we had a gap that was not available on the truly open source systems, right? And also because we didn't have an open source code, there are some systems that no one was porting Java to. So the whole objective here is that now that Java is open source, it can be available literally everywhere. In every open source distribution, it can be ported to any other OS out there that Sun doesn't port or anyone else ports, so you can get a community around it. So for the indie user, for the developer first, the developer has the guarantee that whatever code they develop in Java, they will be able to run anywhere they want that code to run, right? And from the user perspective, it means that if they choose, for example, an open source OS, they choose Linux or they choose, like, for example, Debian, that's a Linux distribution, or Ubuntu or any of those, they will get a certified VM with that OS, right? So they can, if they want to run a Java application, they can just run it because they know that the Java will be there, and it's not going to be a half-baked Java. It's going to be a fully compatible Java VM. Hmm. So it gets everyone the possibility to start building more interesting Java applications that are going to be available everywhere. It allows us to have some Java applications, there's some open source Java applications that have been around for a long time, but that have not been included on Linux distributions because there was the missing link of the Java VM, right? Allows, for example, so for a time, OpenOffice was adding features to OpenOffice that were based in Java, and there was a big discussion in the community, how could OpenOffice do that if Java is not available everywhere, so now the discussion is over again. So it allows for the end user to simply run the application, knowing that he has a compatible implementation, and for the developer knows that whenever he wants to run his Java application, he's going to have a good VM to do that.
Is there any implication also for internationalization? I mean, I suppose this would be more for developers, but I mean, was there any parts of Java that were like so English or so translated? Brazilian Portuguese wasn't included, for example.
Yeah, well, the fact that Java is open source helps a lot on the localization, right? Because then you can do all of the localizations and in the community. Before, if you wanted to do the localizations, you had to have a special agreement with Sun, and it was way harder. So now, yes, we should be a lot easier for the open source communities everywhere to localize to their own languages.
And Dalibor, I interrupted you. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, I think one of the major benefits is really that having OpenJDK 6 in this case as a stable version in different distributions allows people to have the most recent Java version as a baseline for their work. So, for example, in the OpenOffice case, I was part of that conversation as well. So I did a lot of things in the early days, arranging everything and all that, building the cabals. So when we did this OpenOffice stuff, we settled on Java 1.3 as the baseline because that's what GCJ did at that point in time. and ClassPath. And that was something like 4 years ago. So naturally, the use of Java in OpenOffice was a bit hampered by that, since they had to reinvent some wheels that were part of the standard configuration that just came afterwards. So at the moment, there is a conversation going on within the OpenOffice project to move on to OpenJDK as the default baseline, meaning they can suddenly make use of the much more advanced features there in the class library, which then again leads to less code, you know, faster startup and all that.
Now, there are some that say that the Java was actually sort of sidelined because of its lack of open source status, and that's the reason we have so many other languages that have sprung up in the last 4 or 5 years. Do you think this will bring back some of those Java naysayers back into the fold, or do you think its time has passed? Is this a timely effort, or is this a slightly too late to make any difference effort?
The way I see it, Java was open up at its peak, basically. It was not a moment too late, since there was already a significant movement to other languages, to Ruby, for example, that was quite hot. And I mean, in the past 10 years or so, there was always the search for the other big language going on. So people thought C++ would be it once it was standardized, but it wasn't. Then people thought C# is going to be it, but then it wasn't. Then it was Python, and that didn't work out as a complete Java replacement either, and so on and so on. So we see a Java killer language come up every 6 months or so, and then evolve to have a very healthy community and do great stuff, but not kill Java, which is okay. That's the way you want it, really. You want to have many new ideas propagate. And over time, Sun too has recognized that having other languages besides Java is a good thing. So Sun has come to emphasize the JVM as a platform rather than just have this whole bundle deal where it's all Java or nothing else. So this is why you now see an increased focus on projects like Jython, which implements Python on top of the JVM, and JRuby, which implements Ruby on top of the JVM. There is Coucho, which is a really fast implementation of PHP on top of the JVM again. And those things are very exciting because they make use of pretty much the best free software runtime out there. If you look at the technology, the JVM, the hotspot engine, the garbage collectors are top-notch. And they profit immensely from the investment that's being done in Java, not just by Sun, but also by other hardware and operating system vendors. And basically get that investment for free in OpenJDK. So building on top of that means that your code in a different language gets translated into very, very efficient machine code and profits from all the optimizations done, say, for multi-core architectures and stuff like that.
Does that also mean that there'll be some interoperability between those languages? I mean, could a JRuby thing call a JPython thing and then call a Java thing? Is that all going to come back and forth?
There is a fun piece of work going on at the moment, which is called the multi-language VM, or DaVinci VM, led by John Rose, which tries to figure out how to actually modify the JVM itself to make it more suitable for such things, for dynamic languages, for example. And I think they're also looking into things like meta object protocols and stuff like that, since that's a very, very interesting field, right? And there is a lot of optimization potential when you look around at the regular runtimes for dynamic languages. They aren't necessarily built to be extremely efficient on one particular CPU architecture. They're more built to be portable, as your regular open source project would be, right? So accordingly, having an alternative there for deployment purposes, I think, is going to be interesting for all sides. And we see this with the JRuby project, which is coming up pretty nicely in performance numbers on OpenJDK, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see the same with Jython and so on. And Coucho has actually had some really good benchmarks. And they've been able to run PHP a couple of times faster than the regular PHP interpreter, for example.
Okay. Hey, what technologies do I need to compile this? Is this written in C, C++? What's this all written in?
Well, for the largest part in Java, the class libraries, of course, they're all pretty much all written in Java, except for the native bindings. So, for example, when you talk to the XPers, that part is in C and C++. And the VM itself is largely written in C++.
Okay, so anything that has a C++ compiler can pretty much, like if I downloaded this to my Mac, I'd probably be able to compile it then.
You would suffer a bit because bootstrapping requires a fairly up-to-date JVM. So depending on, because it has to run the Java compilers and all that, to actually bootstrap itself. So you would have to have a recent Java 6 update for the Mac, which depends on which CPU architecture you're on, actually, and which OS 10 version you have.
Yeah, I'm on Leopard on Intel. It probably is the latest, right?
Yeah, there's actually a porting project for this. So the BSD distributions, FreeBSD, OpenBSD, NetBSD, all of them are quite similar. So even years ago, they started porting Sun's proprietary JDK to their platforms. They actually had a certified version, have a certified version for FreeBSD called Diablo. Mm-hmm. And I'm in conversation with those guys to bring their code over into OpenJDK to make sure it's all open source and that OpenJDK that way can become part of regular BSD distributions. And one of the fun things that happened around that last year was that, while Apple was taking a bit longer to actually release their 6 builds, a guy named Landon Fuller stepped up on our RSC channel, #OpenJDK, and suggested that he wanted to have a go at porting applying the BSD patches to the Mac code base and tweaking it further to make it work. And he actually did it. And it's called Soy Latte. And that's what a lot of people used in the meantime until Apple was ready to release their own version. Mm. And I'm working on bringing that code over into OpenJDK proper so that you can then get OpenJDK for your Mac from Mac ports, for example, or Fink or whatever you use. Mm-hmm.
Does Firefox come with Java included? Is this going to affect anybody on the Firefox downloads, or is that just going to use the native, whatever it is on the machine?
Firefox doesn't come with Java because they're very, very sensitive to download size. So they would use a native on the machine.
Okay, so having OpenJDK doesn't affect any Firefox downloads then?
Right.
Okay.
Well, but the whole idea is that OpenJDK will allow for everyone to have Java with their OSs. So it's kind of helps Firefox because then it can assume that Java is there.
Yeah, you want Java to be ubiquitous, obviously.
Right, exactly. That's the whole purpose.
Do you guys have a favorite VM for each platform? Or is that politically inappropriate to pick.
Well, I think that's one interesting thing is that I think that Java being open source kind of helps on this, is that we can have now one code base that everyone can customize for their own OSs. And the truth is that who best does an integration with Debian but the Debian community, right?
Right.
Who best does integration with Apple, with Mac OS, than Apple, or who best does integration with whatever system they are on is the community that's run that system. So we really expect that with OpenJDK, we can have the best integration with the OS that each community can provide, and still so we can have Java running really fast, really integrated, really giving the user all of this. All the capabilities of running Java applications as is their native applications. That's the whole purpose of all of these.
Right, right.
And the community has been great with all that. I mean, they've been picking this code up and running with it. So, for example, Red Hat's Gary Benson took the hotspot interpreter, and because of this bootstrapping issue I described before, he figured he would make the one just go away by writing an interpreter that doesn't need any assembler at all. So the interpreter we have in Hotspot actually has slices of assembler code in there for the CPU architecture you're compiling for. And what he did was to replace those bits with a library from the GCC project called libffi for the foreign function interface. So that all of a sudden lets you have OpenJDK building on, say, Itanium or PowerPC or Z series, or what have you. And he's now working on making a similar modification to Hotspot and porting Hotspot to run on top of LLVM, which is the low-level virtual machine toolkit. A rather fun research project and actually used by Apple, as far as I know, in a bunch of things. That has backends for PowerPC and then stuff like that. So I think in terms of my favorite VM engine, I'm seeing a pretty good chance for Hotspot to become really great everywhere, given how much interest there is in making it work.
Well, I guess it's kind of that's kind of an old-fashioned question, since they're really is it best to just rely on the distribution or OS that you've got and use the Java JRE that comes with it? Is there any need to go to Sun or anywhere else to get a improved one?
Well, I think that depends pretty much if you are a user or a developer, right? We would expect that user would just rely on whatever Java implementation comes with the OS. It's of choice.
Right.
But if you're a developer, right, you probably want, the latest versions, the latest implementations. You don't want to wait until it becomes available, or so as a developer, you're probably gonna keep looking for now that's with OpenJDK, they can actually use the latest code being developed, right? You as a developer might be interested in using like the latest and greatest stuff that's out there.
Sure.
Because distributions are more interested in having a solid foundation for bringing more software in, right, rather than having the bleeding edge stuff.
Right.
And you want to have both choices.
Well, I think it's really a great thing to celebrate that Sun has made it open, and it's so clear that there's such a value to it, especially to places like Brazil where open software is a necessity. It's just, and it's great that Brazil kind of prompted this whole move. I think that's fantastic. Any other questions you have, Randall? Or
I'm just wondering what the biggest struggle was. Just considering, what's the biggest pushback that Sun gave in not having this happen, and how was that overcome?
Or did they just say yes, let's do it?
No, not really. I mean, basically, I'm not sure if we've ever had pushback. So they, in the early days, I don't think anybody really thought this would amount to anything. So when we started with really pushing for open source Java back in 2002, there wasn't a bandwagon to hang on to, right? So we had to create our own one. And I think a lot of people were skeptical about the whole thing actually leading anywhere. So once we started citing our distributions, I think a lot of people started looking at what's going on more closely. And Sun was quite reserved for a bit because obviously they didn't want to just go out and do stuff. They didn't have to, right? If there was no demand. So we first took some time to make sure to show that, yes, there is demand for free Java, and to dispel all these fears people had about open source and all that. That took a couple of years. And then we started talking with Sun seriously and, of course, made sure that they know what we were up to, why we wanted what we wanted, that we're going to get it at some point in time and all that, that we understood they were gradually moving towards open source. They would surely take their own time, and that's okay. Meanwhile, we would push ahead with our own work, and when they're ready, they can join us. I mean, from my position, they were ready to join us much earlier than I had anticipated. I was thinking it would happen around 2012. So,
wow.
But it wasn't really pushback. It was simply that how fast the whole thing took off was very surprising. I mean, when we started out, we had our first meeting of the ClassPath community at FOSTEM 2004, I think. That was in February. That was just a couple of weeks after Eric Raymond and IBM had begged Sun to open source Java. And we were all very disappointed that people were into begging Sun to do things for them rather than just doing them themselves like we did. And to go from then in 2004 to, you know, 2006, 2007 to have all the code out is extremely fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so I think
Sorry.
No, I think that's the reception for the project was very, very positive. And as Dalibor was saying, kind of it jump started, you know, it cuts in half, let's say, all of the effort that everyone else was trying to do to make this happen. So I think that the challenge that we at Sun have right now is making sure that all of these people that were working on other implementations and were passionate about Java, because I think that those guys were incredibly passionate about Java because they were doing it against all odds, right? As I was saying before, you know, both the Java community and the open source community was just ignoring those guys' work. And I think that those are extremely passionate people about Java. And the challenge is, what do we need to do to make sure that they are happy with OpenJDK and they are happy in contributing to the project and they are happy, you know, that the project evolves as fast as those guys want. And at the same time, you know, it keeps all of the interests and stability and quality that the users expect. So it is a challenging environment. But I think that this challenge of making sure that everyone that was participating on free Java before OpenJDK can now participate on free Java inside the OpenJDK project.
That's great. So you had to basically start with something where the demand wasn't even obvious and the players were playing in their own camps. And the two of you both coming at it sort of from like parallel but somewhat separate angles had to bring together the demand and then go to Sun with it and say, look, here's this demand. And then get Sun to respond to it. And you're still having to sort of say, well, here's the community. Everybody come play in the same playground because now we've got all the swing sets set up and everything, right?
Right. And swing was a good analogy.
He snuck that in. Oh, that was I would not admit to that. That was very good.
Yeah. Oh, guys, your work was great. I really appreciate what you did for the Java community and the open source community.
No
both.
Kidding.
This is
no kidding.
This is really a milestone. Really, really important in the history of computing. This will definitely be looked at as an important turning point.
And I think that we all have to thank the huge effort. Not only all the engineers and managers and everything inside Sun to actually make this happen, because it's a huge effort, but also all of the people from the communities, you know, they're doing this before and they're doing this now with us. And, you know, I think that if we had done all this effort to make it happen and then the response of the community was, well, we don't care, then, you know, everyone would say, well, no, we wasted our time. But actually, in fact, we saw a huge response from the community. And that's what keeps the project strong and going forward.
Great. And the acceptance from my guerrilla comrades side has been pretty good, actually. So many of the ClassPath virtual machines that have fought with us for free Java, for the liberation, basically, many of them have now started to use OpenJDK as well for their class library. So we have Kakao, which is a very nice research virtual machine from the TU in Vienna in Austria that has published a recent version that has support for OpenJDK as its class library. We have IKVM, which is a really cool cross-compiler, basically, from Java to .NET, which also now is getting support for OpenJDK in recent versions. There is work going on for JNode, which is a JVM that's pretty much completely written in Java to use OpenJDK. That also comes from ClassPath community. There is some work happening on Jikes RVM and so on and so on. So that was one of the things I was afraid of pulling off the migration, basically, from challenging Sun on one hand to do the right things and then getting something done with the code. And that has been actually going quite well.
Very good. Very good.
Well, thanks for joining us, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. That's a great opportunity. You know, I just love your guys' shows and thanks a lot for having us here.
Great.
And thanks for everyone that's listened to this to take the time to come learn a little bit more about OpenJDK.
You want to, Dalibor, you want to suggest a place they can go for more information?
Well, there is always openjdk.java.net, and there is the IRC channel #openjdk. So if you're into that kind of thing, IRC is basically Twitter for old people, but it's great.
I heard of that once.
IRC on what network? Freenode?
OFTC.
Okay, great.
Well, Dalibor Topic and Bruno Souza, thank you so much for joining us. And again, I want to echo Randall's gratitude for pushing Sun to do what needed to be done to make a Java something we all could be a part of. That's really great.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
There you go. Dalibor Topic and Bruno Souza, who were instrumental in getting the OpenJDK going. I didn't realize, Randall, I was kind of shocked when you asked him how much Sun resisted or how much interest Sun had in this. I didn't realize that it really wasn't something Sun wanted to do up front. They said 2012.
Yeah, I know. It's really fascinating, especially when it started with that meeting with Gosling and then still took repeated meetings and then having them have to get the community together to say, by the way, we would all like this if this happened. I mean, it's one thing to have a demand that you're just asking for the supply. It's another thing to have to coalesce the demands that it's obvious.
Right.
Incredible work on these guys' part. And then the fact that now they're both working on the Sun side, making it happen from the inside, also making, because now they've got the bigger problem of, well, now we've done it.
How do you do it?
show that it's ongoing and show that it actually works. Yeah.
Well, and credit to Sun for saying, okay, well, let's bring these guys in. They did the advocacy. Let's have them come and support the effort. I guess Sun always acted as if from day one, the Java, that it was, they couldn't call it open, but that it wasn't proprietary either.
Well, yeah. What they wanted to have open was the interface. They said, we'll build the bits inside, and we're going to give you the ability to link against it and make your code run everywhere. We'll make sure that this binary, this VM, runs on every place that matters. Now, the problem is that they didn't make it run every place that mattered to everyone, and that's where the extra effort went to do Cafe and the other things that were started on the outside.
Right.
And now with it all open source, we're all back on the same page. It's like, okay, now Sun can notice and make it work on everything that matters to Sun and their overall scheme. But if there's like, say, if the iPhone doesn't matter to Sun, then somebody else can port it, like Apple can port it to the iPhone and not worry about it.
Right.
Be the real stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, there are a lot of open source projects written in Java. And that's the other side of it, is that you're creating these open source projects like OpenOffice using what is ultimately not an open platform.
Yeah, and that was definitely a point of consternation for the open source community. Here we are building on a platform that the base of the platform isn't open. And so obviously that's where a lot of this drive came from as well. And then there's the people that won't run anything that's proprietary on their box, and that's great. There are people that are like that, and Java wasn't open to them because of that, although they could run something like Cafe or one of the other implementations. But again, the fact that Java or that Sun has finally moved forward and said, here's the real Java, and it's really open source, and it's every piece of it is open source except for that little SMP thing I talked about. But basically that it's open source now, and that is an amazing accomplishment. It brings it back into the realm of the players.
Right. Yeah, it's a sea change. And he said an interesting thing. He said it happened at the peak of Java as a language, and I didn't want to say anything, but what happens after the peak?
It's all downhill from
here. Yeah, and I think it was important because I think Java has somewhat been eclipsed by these newer scripting languages. The flavors of the month, Ruby and Python and so forth. And
although, yes, as a VM, it's actually not a bad VM. So
that's what's really interesting. Yeah.
JRuby runs faster than Ruby, and JPython runs faster than Python. Right. Not sure about Python, but the fact that these are out there and these implementations are getting there, and it's just really interesting now to see where this is all headed. And, excuse me for once again bringing up Smalltalk and things like that, but the VM of the hotspot VM that they were talking about being the absolute best VM was actually originally built for self, which was a derivative of Smalltalk. And so there's the Smalltalk connection always again.
Your involvement with Perl, we've talked before about Perl 6 and how Perl 6 is moving to a VM. Clearly the VM model is a good model for languages. Why is that?
It works because you can isolate some of the higher level issues from some of the very
garbage collection, for instance.
Yeah, like you really don't want to have to think about in your compiler that you're translating to. You don't want to think about, you know, the fact that I'm going to allocate a block of memory here and then I'm going to remove it when I get to the end of the subroutine. You just want that to all be automatic. It also means that you can have different languages interoperate by having a VM base level. For example, the Perl 6 community, by separating Perl 6, the implementation at the top level, from the Parrot VM down at the bottom, they can create a Ruby module for Parrot and a Python module for Parrot and a Smalltalk module for Parrot. And it just works because then you get this interoperability thing. Now, from what I understand, they looked at the original Java VM and they didn't like it for dynamic languages. And that's why this DaVinci project that they talked about briefly is actually trying to change the VM so that it handles dynamic languages better. It has to do with the fact that objects can mutate their classes and objects can mutate their inheritance hierarchy at runtime, which the Java VM cannot handle.
So you want to be able to do that.
Yeah, right, because dynamic languages would love to do that, and that's part of the issue there. And loose typing also doesn't work very well in something that's...
On the other hand, enterprises are going to say, well, that's exactly what we don't want for security reasons.
Well, yeah, maybe there's a whole issue about that, but that's But this is great. This is great that we got these guys on, and I'm really really fun chat with them. And it wasn't until a few days ago that Bruno reminded me. Bruno reminded me that I had bumped into him at Fizzly
in Brazil.
So it's just great that he's back on the air for this.
Well, in some ways, I think you can say they are heroes of the open source movement. I mean, getting Java to move Sun open source is a huge step forward. And so many Java projects, on SourceForge can now breathe a sigh of relief. And I think that's really
absolutely.
Great. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to take a couple of weeks off because you've got some places to be. You're going to OSCON, right?
I am going to see if I can get some audio at OSCON, though, and I think it might be a good appropriate philosophy topic in there. So I'll see if I can answer that. But I won't promise anything yet because, I said that with Fizzly, too, and I didn't do that. So
yeah, because you end up partying a little too hard, I think, Randall.
We've got okay, sure.
You enjoy these events a little too much.
It won't be Caipirinhas, though. It'll just be good old Oregon beer.
Okay, so OSCON's up your way. It's in Portland.
OSCON, this is one of the few conferences I go to where I can sleep in my own bed every night.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
But in 2 weeks, August 6th, we're going to come back with a bang. I've been wanting to get Mark on for a long time. Mark Spencer is the guy behind Asterisk, which is one of the most successful open source projects out there. I mean, ranks right up there with Apache.
And
Sugar CRM. It is a PBX that people are using, especially because Trixbox, which is kind of the point and click version of it, is so easy to implement. In fact, I've been looking at doing it. You know, after we had the collapses during we had so many people calling us during the 24 hours of iPhone that neither Skype nor Ufu could handle it. I think I have to put in a PBX system, and of course Asterisk is the choice.
Some way to deal with all that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That'd be really cool.
Mark Spencer is going to be our guest August 6th or thereabouts. We'll tape August 6th live on twitlive.tv. You can always watch all these shows being produced live. Floss is produced live generally at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern. That's 2100 UTC on Wednesdays. Again, we'll take the next two Wednesdays off, but we will be back live at twitlive.tv on August 6th. Have a great time at OSCON.
Thanks, Leo.
And we'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.